This is Melange à deux, a Vienna podcast. Herzlich willkommen. Hi, everybody. This is Frau Batsby from Melange à deux. I forgot the name. I am with Herr X. Say hello.
Hello.
And we are going to talk about The Third Man, the movie, the myth, the legend today. It's not a highly structured episode. I have the synopsis that I'll kind of read through. We'll stop, discuss, talk a little. It's going to be kind of...
I thrive on a lack of structure.
I know. Yeah. It's amazing you get dressed every day. How are you?
Fantastic.
Good.
She definitely does look relieved that I am feeling fantastic.
Good. Yeah, I'm glad.
Good.
Good. Excellent. So, we watched The Third Man, 2 weeks ago? You had watched it before you moved here.
I watched it 1 week before I came to Vienna because I was like, well, you know, might as well learn a little bit about the city before
see
I come.
See how the city looks.
And I was like, oh.
It's dark.
Looks like a post-war apocalypse.
Yeah, I watched it in high school, and then I think I watched it again, maybe in my 20s or 30s. I don't know. But I had forgotten a lot about the film, but it's great. It's a classic.
It definitely, when I view it, I see it differently now, you know, having lived here.
Yeah, I think you get a different sense of the Viennese. Because when you watch it, you don't really get it completely. It's still a wonderful film. But then when you live here, you're like, oh, yeah, that tracks.
And also you realize that the Viennese haven't changed all that much.
No. But it's a delightful film. And yeah, today we'll talk about it. It'll be some fun facts and some... I'll read the synopsis. We'll talk about what's going on. And yeah, just easygoing, fun podcast. Next week we'll be with part two of Alma Mahler. So this is just a little... bonus episode. And yeah, my sources, I didn't have many, was imdb.com, Wikipedia, screenonline.org, which has the synopsis, and us, because we're so knowledgeable now.
I was about to say, the most important source, our own four eyes.
Our own four eyes. Well, six, you got glasses. So the movie was filmed in 1949. It's film noir style, and it's called a rubble film. It's a film that means that it was filmed in Europe after World War II among the ruins of the continent. So it was filmed in 1949, written by Graham Greene, who wrote a lot of great spy novels, directed by Carol Reed, a man. And there's two kind of female-sounding names in this who are men. So Carol Reed, the person who plays Holly, is a man.
Right.
That's Joseph Cotten, Orson Welles, of course. Italian actress Alida Valli, who, very fascinating, she was an actress in Italy during Mussolini time, but she did not act in the films because she didn't believe in propaganda films for the regime. Trevor Howard and Bernard Lee, who played M in Bond films in later years.
Two different M's.
No.
No, no. There were this is a fun fact that I learned.
Oh.
There were two different guys who played M later on, and they were both in the film. There's the one that we definitely recognized as being M, but there's a second guy who had about two Bond films.
Oh, okay. I did not know that.
Yeah.
Oh, well, thanks for bringing...
Well, see. Well,
happy to help.
Yeah.
All right. So I will get into the synopsis, the spoiler alert, but the film is really old, so not my fault. Watch it. So an American pulp writer, Holly Martins, arrives in Vienna shortly after the end of World War II. The city is divided into Russian, American, British, and French zones and patrolled by military policemen from each country. We'll talk a little bit about that, about the city.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, Vienna, as the rest of the country, was all split up into zones. And we're actually broadcasting from what was once the British zone. Of Vienna, and so you had basically American zone, French, Russian, British, and then you had the what is now the first district is the center, and that was run internationally by all four, and they would take turns basically administering the zone. And there's also that famous, what is it, the four in the Jeep?
Yeah.
So symbolizing that. And the post-war Vienna was very interesting, very similar to what I would surmise as post-war Berlin prior to the wall going up, where you have the different allies administering sections. And of course, the rest of Austria also had their own zones
yeah.
as well.
And yeah, the Russian section was one of the hardest ones to live in. And yeah, there were like kind of mass suicides after World War II from people not wanting to be under Russian control. Also, the loss of World War II. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting. So yeah, you can definitely see that this was the British area. There's definitely of a different feeling mm-hmm. in Vienna, in the different districts. Second district we lived in before, which was the Russian-controlled area. And so, okay, back to the plot. Holly has come to work for a medical charity run by an old friend, Harry Lime. But when he arrives, there's no sign of Harry. My one question about the name Harry Lime, because I was thinking about it. So Limes, limes.
Maybe they meant a kiwi. They thought it was a hairy lime.
Lime or Limes is an old Roman road to Vienna
okay.
from Rome. So I'm wondering if Graham Greene came up with that name based on that.
That would be brilliant.
Right?
Yeah.
It's like sometimes when people have read one of my books, like, did you mean to use that as a metaphor? I'm like, yes. No. I don't know. So then Holly goes to his flat where the porter tells him that Harry's been killed in a car accident. Holly rushes to the city cemetery for the burial. Major Calloway, a British military policeman, takes Holly back into the city afterwards. In a bar, Calloway tells him that Harry was a racketeer. Your son just wrote again.
Two for two.
he doesn't know why he didn't see that message. But now it's clear. Okay. And then there's LOL, just to tell you what I'm seeing on the screen. Teenagers.
Am I right?
Okay, so Calloway tells him that Harry was a racketeer. Of course, in the film, we see that Holly does not believe this. This is his old pal, Harry. There's no way. And also, he thinks, okay, if he's a racketeer, it's simple stuff like gas stealing. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that was kind of the, what's it called, currency back post-war here in Vienna. So Sergeant Payne takes Holly to the soccer hotel where they meet Crabbin of the British Cultural Re-Education Center. Crabbin agrees to pay for Holly's stay if he'll deliver a lecture because Holly, again, he's a writer, pulp fiction writer. Holly's called to the telephone to speak to Baron Kurtz. They meet at a cafe and Kurtz tells him that Harry's last words were to ask Kurtz to look out for Holly. Kurtz tells him that Harry's girlfriend is an actress. So at this point, Holly's trying to figure out what the dealio is.
Mm-hmm.
So backstage at the Josefstadt Theater, which is in Vienna still, Holly speaks to Anna Schmidt. Holly voices his suspicions about Harry's death. They visit the porter again, who contradicts Kurtz, Baron Kurtz. Harry was killed instantaneously, and there was a third man carrying the body. That's right. Why we have...
The third man.
The third man. At Anna's flat, Calloway confiscates letters and her papers. She explains to Holly that they're forged. She's Czechoslovakian and subject to repatriation by the Russians. So what's happening, of course, at this point with the USSR?
Mm-hmm.
I'm asking you.
I didn't know I had to be prepared.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm assuming the Iron Curtain really didn't fall then, but I mean, it was really at the beginnings of it. And obviously, yeah, if somebody was staying illegally, and I guess in a forged passport, they would be repatriated to Czechoslovakia, and she desperately wants to stay in Vienna.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and at that time, all the allies were kind of working, together, and obviously, yeah, gave the Russians that information, and they desperately wanted to see, yeah, if they could repatriate her
mm-hmm.
to Czechoslovakia.
And she was hot.
And you don't know which one. Was it Slovakia? Was it Czech Republic? Nobody knows.
Nobody knows.
It's Czech or Slovakia.
Yeah, I once told you I taught English to a Slovakian guy, and I was like, so really, what's the difference? He's like, Slovakia superior. I was like, oh, okay.
Let me guess where you're from.
So before she's taken away, she mentions Dr. Winkel. So Holly goes to Winkel's home, where the doctor concedes that Harry's injuries might have been the result of foul play. At police headquarters, Calloway questions Anna about a letter she wrote to one Joseph Harden, instructing him to meet Harry. Now we're at the Casanova Club. Kurtz introduces Holly to Popescu, a Romanian guy. Holly questions him about the third man.
How do they know by the last name?
I'm guessing. Yeah. Popescu. I'm not that smart, but I figured that one out. Holly questions him about the third man, explaining that the porter is the source of his information. Later, Popescu, Kurtz, and Winkel are seen meeting a man on a bridge. Meanwhile, Holly paces around the street outside Harry's building, and the porter tells him to come back later. When Holly and Anna do return, there's a crowd outside the door. The porter has been murdered. And I think this is also the scene where the little boy,
right,
the narc, sees him.
Papa!
And what's really interesting about that little kid, he was the son of like a studio worker. Mm. And they just kind of hired him on the spot.
He was great.
He was really great. He was a little creepy, but he was really great. At the soccer hotel, Holly is bundled into a car. And it's hilarious because he thinks he's being kidnapped or to be murdered. But he's dropped off at the British Cultural Center where Crabbin and an audience are waiting for his lecture. It's a fiasco.
Yeah.
I love that scene where he's on the stage.
It's a fantastic scene.
Yeah. It's like my biggest fear is being brought on completely unprepared. It's kind of what you do every week when I talk to you.
Yeah.
And then I ask you a question and you panic. Popescu arrives with two heavies. Holly escapes and goes to Calloway's office where the major explains in detail how Harry was involved in selling watered-down penicillin. Many died and others were mentally incapacitated. Yeah. And I think he still doesn't believe him completely at that point. He just thinks that the British guy is trying to rope him
right,
finding him. Holly gets drunk in a bar, then stumbles to Anna's and tells her he's in love with her. She shrugs him off. When he leaves, he sees a man's feet in a doorway. He shouts, prompting a woman to open a window. The light in her flat illuminates Harry.
It's one of the best shot scenes.
It's an incredible scene. Yeah. Even if you just watch that part, that film is like that moment is great. Orson Welles' like face is iconic. His little smirk and and also because with the cat, she says at one point that the cat only likes Harry, and so when you see the cat going and rubbing against these feet in the shadow,
and also as she only likes Harry,
right?
Yeah. Because what's insinuated is he's trying to...
Look at you. Yeah.
Oh, no, I have depth. I thought about this.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a lot of say on what I think this movie means.
All right, we'll talk about that afterwards.
Yeah.
Your thesis. So the light in her flat illuminates Harry, blah, blah, blah. He runs off and disappears into this big empty square. Later, Holly recounts the story to Calloway, who doesn't believe him until he notices a kiosk, which is an entrance to the city's sewers.
Mm-hmm.
Calloway disinters the body supposed to be Harry's. This was at the beginning of the film where you see the funeral. It's Hardin, a medical orderly involved in the racket. Anna is picked up and on the way to Calloway's office, Holly tells her that Harry's alive. Later, Holly tells Kurtz to pass a message on that he'll meet Harry at the Ferris Wheel. Mm-hmm. The reason about the very famous place. We used to have a view of that. It was really cool. After a short wait, Harry arrives. He admits his racketeering, but offers to cut Holly in. And in that scene, that's such a great scene when they're on the Ferris wheel, he opens that door, kind of like insinuating he's going to kill his best friend. Holly tells Calloway about the meeting, but refuses to help capture him. But when a Russian official, Brodsky, comes in threatening to claim Anna, Holly relents. He looks on as Anna boards a train. When she sees him, she confronts him and realizes that Calloway has enabled her to escape only because Holly is cooperating with him. She rips up her new papers. That was one of the most frustrating scenes.
Your train is leaving.
We were so mad. Get on the train. Get on the train.
Just get on it.
So Holly...
But it didn't matter. She just ripped up the thing. She had the incriminating evidence that would have sent her back. She just ripped it.
No, she had new papers.
Well... Yes, but the whole idea was the guy got the passport back.
Yeah.
Right? The Brits had the passport.
Right.
And he's going to start her on a new life in Paris.
Right.
And she's like, no.
That's what I mean. Like, she's so stupid.
No, but in the end, she just wanted to stay in Vienna. Like, she just didn't want to be
Vienna,
repatriated.
But I just, get a little bit of further away from the Russians.
Yeah. Well, I think, wait till I go into my diatribe.
Okay. You know what really grinds my gears? So Holly goes back to Calloway and backs out of the deal. Calloway offers to drive him to the airport. And this is where Calloway is super smart. And stops at the hospital where he shows Holly children demented by the bootleg penicillin. That's a really good scene.
Mm-hmm.
You don't show anything, but you definitely get the sense of the horror and awful things that have happened to these kids because of his friend. Later, Holly waits for Harry at a cafe while police lurk outside. Anna enters just before Harry and warns him off. That woman. She's driving me nuts. Harry escapes to the sewers, the police in pursuit. He shoots Payne dead, but is wounded by Calloway. Holly finishes Harry off. At the cemetery, Holly and Anna finally see Harry's body into the ground. Holly waits for her by the road leading into the city, but she walks past him and away without even a glance.
Yeah.
The end. I did not write the synopsis. Thank you to the source that I mentioned before.
No, it was a great movie. You definitely have to watch it. It's available everywhere. And it's, yeah, I just think it's so deep and actually sums up an American coming to Vienna and how it could change you. Or well, if you don't let it change you, it could eat you alive also. But it's a great, great movie. And yeah, I have my own takes on it. But just the way it's shot uses that, what is it called, the Dutch angle,
mm-hmm.
is, you know, to kind of like give you this kind of dizzying effect. Because
everything's a little crooked. And
Yeah, it's crooked. Even the way the movie starts, right? Mm-hmm. Like you walk, it's like the guy shows up expecting to meet his friend, and then all of a sudden he's dead and he's trying to find out this. So it's like you wake up in a weird, bad, like a bad dream.
Mm-hmm.
And you're trying to figure out what's happening. Not too different than when I first started. No, it is.
But yeah, really, so what is your thesis on this? What are your thoughts about the whole thing?
Well, so how I would summarize it in maybe not too long-winded away is that Holly, the American, he's coming in. He's a guy that writes westerns.
Mm-hmm.
He sees things in black and white, mm-hmm. good versus evil, and Vienna is anything but that. Mm-hmm. Right, Vienna, if you learn one thing about Vienna, is that there's Yin, right? There's mm-hmm. Ja, there's Nein, there's kind of a combination of both. There's, you kind of see the grays in things. People learn to, the whole idea of the black market was, listen, people are going to get by. They're going to, they got to do what they got to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why even in the beginning, you know, you meet Kurtz, and Kurtz is like, yeah, you know, people have to do this to make a living,
mm-hmm.
Sell tires or do this and that.
Yeah, and Kurtz, who's actually a baron, he talks about how he plays violin in the Casanova Club, and
yeah.
he's like, and he had sold tires or something, and he's like, if my father could see me now, like the disappointment, yeah, that's what you had to do.
You had to do it.
You had, yeah.
So the situation, and the one thing that you do learn about the Viennese is that they're incredibly intelligent, and they will find a way to, regardless of the circumstance, to come out through it, which is also part of what the sewer is, you know, like, mm-hmm. like you got to go underground to survive. You got to do it. So you have one, you juxtapose the American who's black and white,
idealistic.
Westerns, idealistic, da, 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 mm-hmm. right? And these guys who are, they've gone through hell,
yeah.
and they're basically, they're trying to make do. So the lady, the love interest, the actress, Schmidt,
Anna Schmidt, yeah.
Yeah. So she basically loves Lime. And you can see the whole thing is the American, now assuming that Lime is dead, he falls in love with her. He's there, and there's that scene where he's at kind of what appears to be a brothel, and he gets those roses to go give it to her, meaning that of all the choices of the women in the world, he's fallen in love with her.
Was that a brothel, or that it was just a club?
With a whole bunch of ladies lined up.
They just like a drink.
Listen,
oh my God, I'm so naive. It was like
1949. I don't know.
It was like my mother when they first moved to Germany, and they were sex workers on the side of the street, and she thought they were cocktail waitresses.
But I mean, it might as well have been, or it could have been, yeah, it could have been widows, right? But the idea is that
I forgot the woman at the bar.
he had his whole choice of a whole bunch of ladies, but yeah. he really wanted this lady,
mm-hmm.
and she just would have nothing to do with him.
Mm-hmm.
She kept calling him Harry.
Yeah.
The cat didn't even want anything to do with him.
Yeah.
It's like Vienna was rejecting him in every way possible because he was just he's not getting it.
Mm-hmm.
They have to survive. They have to do things. And it's not like even the solutions that he's offering, like, I'm going to put you on a train to Paris.
Yeah.
And she's like, just rip up the paper.
Yeah.
Problem solved. I'm not getting deported.
Yeah.
So the whole thing was like, he was trying to fix things. And everything he did was just not doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
And which is why when she's walking past him, it's just like, I have nothing to do with you. You and he's waiting kind of like, I'm now like, you know, the guy who's coming in to rescue you.
Yeah.
She's like, whatever. Like, you still don't get it. So it's kind of like she symbolized Vienna pushing back on him.
Mm-hmm.
He was never getting Vienna.
Mm-hmm.
He was never getting the girl, never getting the cat, he couldn't get anything. Now, the interesting part is, with Lime, Lime was making a statement. So on one side, you have the cowboy, mm-hmm. you have the American, you have the Brit, who's also, he's a military guy. He's seeing things black and white also. Mm-hmm. And even something as abhorrent as diluting penicillin, I think Lime says it in that famous scene in the, he's like, look, governments do this all the time. Mm-hmm. Why are we not allowed to get involved in the game? And it's kind of an interesting thing to say, like, look, you're playing by a set of rules. Like, him and the military guy are basically on the same page, especially when he sees the severity of it. Mm-hmm. But I think it's a very deep, it really makes you start thinking. It's like, well, how far is the line that you would go? Is mm-hmm. it from selling tires to diluting penicillin and killing children, right? Mm-hmm. So it makes you question these types of things. But I think ultimately it really is the West, by the West I mean Britain and the US, versus Vienna's very unique way of yin. Mm-hmm. And yin is, yeah.
It's fantastic, honey.
It's a good take.
Yeah.
I thought about it quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And also when you see the Third Man Museum, and it really, so it's, and it's funny because if you watch this as an American never been to Vienna, you don't really pick up on it, and you don't really, because you don't know the Viennese. Mm-hmm. And it's not to say that, well, would it make a Viennese person more inclined to go black market or this and that?
No.
I don't think so.
No.
But I think it's because at that time, the Americans and the Brits were so, everything was going so well mm-hmm. that they never had to make these choices.
Right.
So everything was black and white. Mm-hmm. And my last thing is when he's in that thing where he has to meet the intellectuals mm-hmm. and talk about his book.
Yeah.
And they were asking him, like, well, what's your take on James Joyce?
Yeah.
And using, you know, very highfalutin language or, you know, this and that. And he was out of his element because mm-hmm. he's like, well, I've never pondered these types of things. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of, and they lost interest because they're like, you don't care about these existential things that we deal with.
Yeah, you stupid American.
Yeah, I mean, but they're saying it kind of because you don't get us. You don't understand what we're dealing with. You're just writing about cowboy stuff. And mm-hmm. and of course the propaganda guy loved it and he wanted to introduce him to them. Because he's like, yeah, maybe they could see things black and white. And obviously that went wrong.
You've spent a lot of time thinking about this.
I did. No, this movie really cut deep into... So that's my diatribe.
No, I love it. No, I think... But that's the thing is I don't think a lot of people really understand, like if you've grown up in the States, what it was like in Europe after World War II and just the absolute devastation. And it's so easy to forget how much people suffered and that we're only a couple generations out from that time.
Yeah.
So you kind of understand it. I mean, what was that interesting fact that you found out about workers, the difference between Europe and the States? You were listening to a podcast recently or were you reading an article?
Oh, yeah. That up until
it's
the
a very 19... intellectual episode.
No. Up until the 1960s, it was a podcast I was just listening to. I'm trying to remember to give credit to where I heard this. It was Kara Swisher and Scott Galloway had a podcast about the guy who was talking about the nature of work and is remote working and hybrid working going to happen and work-life balance. And he says a lot of people in America don't know this, or in Europe or the world in general, don't know this. But until the 1960s, Europeans and Americans worked... North Americans worked the same amount of hours, were as productive, worked the same amount. And then eventually efficiencies came to be, and which accelerated growth, right? So it gave more stuff, more ability to do things. And essentially where it diverged was the Europeans were like, well, this means we could work less now.
Mm-hmm.
Like we don't need more stuff. And the Americans, well, we want more stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when the work week or stayed at two weeks of vacation or maybe went down to 2 weeks of vacation and the Europeans went to 6 weeks of vacation, mm-hmm. The social safety net and et cetera. But it was basically, they were neck and neck in terms of the amount of work.
That's crazy.
Then the Europeans decided, well, we would just prefer not to work as much.
Yeah, we don't need as many things.
We're fine with what we have. And the Americans were like more, more, more. And mm-hmm. of course, with Wall Street and
et cetera. It's so crazy. Yeah, because I told you I saw that it was a clip, something on the TikTok, where they were talking about the show Mad Men and about how post-war it was the first time people had leisure time. And so they decided that the best way to fill it is for you to buy things.
Buy more things.
Buy more things. No, that's really fascinating. I think Third Man is a great way to look at how the city was recovering at the time. And I mean, now you can't really see anything of the war here. It's incredible how it's been fixed. But yeah, there's still definitely a sense of people knowing that good things don't last forever and being a little bit conservative with spending. And yeah, it's
well, I think, and also, I mean, there is a, in America, we have an American exceptionalism.
Yeah.
Like we're really, like, we're just ordained to be great people.
Mm-hmm.
And you have, in Vienna, you have people who are like, no, it's not too far removed where we did bad things.
Yeah.
So there's a self-introspection that mm-hmm. I guess we don't do in America.
Yeah.
Or when we do it, we don't come to the right conclusion sometimes. But it's, what can I say? What was it? What was it? They said if they had to rebrand America, they said, we are our worst critics, but we choose to stay here. So in the sense that it's a great place to live,
yeah.
But we will critique ourselves, but it'll continue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah. No, I think I really like your thesis on the Third Man. That's great, honey.
It's good, right?
Hey, you can teach a class.
No. I don't think there have been many movies that hit me so hard.
Poor Things.
Poor Things. Another one. Well, The Godfather. No. But The Third Man, especially. Well, and also to be fair, I mean, I did a bit of reading on the net and seeing certain things and certain people's takes, but the idea of the cowboy versus the yin mm-hmm. people, I think it really resonates. But you can see it in everything, in all the interactions.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Huh. Well, if people are interested in learning more about The Third Man, oh, these are a couple fun facts. But before that, we do recommend the museum, The Third Man.
Yes.
It's open every Saturday in the 4th District. It's amazing.
It's also, even if you're not 100% like going just because of the movie, even just the artifacts from World War II and
really
the reconstruction. Yeah.
And it's in three different buildings because it keeps expanding. It started by this one man who was like a private collector of things. He loves the film with his wife. And then it just keeps expanding. So when you go, they'll explain it to you, but you kind of have to like keep going to
three different buildings.
It's really cool. They have a projector from 1936.
In the 1930s. 1936, I think.
Yeah, it was, which they run a little clip on, which was really cool. Yeah, and then they kind of show post-war and like the different military things. So yeah, it's... and you can tell that they're very anti-populist. they definitely talk about that at one point, which is great. We need to learn from history. So that was really cool. And there's the walking tour that we haven't done yet, but we definitely have that on our list, where you go into the sewers of Vienna. I don't think they work as sewers anymore.
Oh, I don't know. I haven't been.
So these are a couple of fun facts that I did find online. So apparently Martin Scorsese wrote a major thesis about The Third Man.
I'm telling you, you can write books on this.
He received a B+. His
really?
Professor said, forget it, it's just a thriller.
No. Well, you know what? We don't remember the professor's name, but we will all remember Martin Scorsese.
Exactly. Good job, Marty.
Yeah.
Harry Lime, Orson Welles, is only in the film for a total of 5 minutes.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, even his absence, he's, you know, his whole name and everyone's looking for him.
Yeah.
No, it's great.
So the ending was actually supposed to be different. So Graham Greene wanted this to be a bit of a happy ending to the film because it's a Hollywood film and generally Hollywood audiences, like European films you watch, like,
yeah.
Look, European films are tough for me. I like a happy ending. I watch a lot of like happy, fun time, romantic comedies, rom-coms. But yeah, Graham Greene wanted it so that when Holly's walking down at the end of the cemetery, he hugs Anna, like they hug each other and they end up together. But the director, Carol Reed, actually nixed it and changed the ending. And I think because Carol Reed had spent a little bit of time in Vienna researching, and I think he was like, no, this film doesn't need that happy ending.
No, and I think it would have changed the whole thing at the end. Is like, no, he never got Vienna, and Vienna never got him.
Yeah.
Like, it's... No, it was perfect. It would have. I think it would have changed the whole movie, and it would have left. It wouldn't have been.
I think it would have cheapened it a little bit.
It would have cheapened it.
Yeah. Look at us. We're such a highfalutin intellectual. It would have cheapened.
But well, I forgot to mention though. One of the greatest things though with the was the Orson Welles speech about the cuckoo clock.
Yes, that is the best quote. I didn't even put the quote in. My knee is a dum-dum. But yeah, it's something about, I will paraphrase it, but Italy had, what, a ton of wars, civil wars, and they created like Leonardo da Vinci and Michelangelo.
Yeah.
Switzerland had 500 years of democracy and created the cuckoo clock. That's a great quote.
Yeah, yeah. Which is kind of... And in a way, it really sums up, you know, I mean, obviously we're in Austria, it's a functioning democracy, there is, you know, rule of law, but there is, it's one of the things that I do like about Vienna is that there is kind of, there's room to debate,
There's room to debate. I mean, they have their rules, but I think they're very logical. So, like, yes. If you say to someone, well, that doesn't make any sense. I think one of the most interesting things was happening when you first moved here. They passed a rule. I mean, it was originally a very Islamophobic rule that women couldn't have face covers or people couldn't cover their faces because they wanted to stop the burqa. There's like literally five women in Austria that wear the burqa, fine, but they were doing this ban. So one of the first tickets they gave out was to the McShark mascot.
Yeah.
And McShark was like, yeah, fair enough.
It's the rule.
The rule.
Yeah.
And I kind of enjoyed that. I found it a very Viennese thing that the police were like, we're supposed to ticket people for covering their faces. We know what it's for, but let's just like go after a mascot because it's a ridiculous rule.
You know, I would say, you know, everybody when they grow up, there's a point where they're like, oh, this isn't fair, and you learn that life isn't fair.
Yeah.
The Viennese go out of their way to try to make life fair.
I think so. I mean, yeah, there's jerks out there and the people who take advantage. I mean, what I will say about the Viennese, a lot of them will kind of push the boundaries as much as possible.
They'll push it. They'll see it. How far they can go. Yeah. But they do.
But there is a sense of fairness, and I don't feel, it's kind of like what I've mentioned so many times, like if we're in the States and I'm at the airport and they're like, for extra money, you can cut the security line like to go faster. And that drives me crazy. Yeah. That drives me nuts. Because first of all, I show up super early. So I'm like, but the fact that you're, for a service that we're being forced to go through, you want me to pay money to skip the line. And I'm this close to paying for it. And that makes me mad.
Yeah.
I don't want to throw my money away. It drives me crazy. It's kind of like the resort fees at a hotel in downtown Manhattan. There is no resort. What kind of resort? Not a resort. Oh, you made sure the homeless man wasn't right in front of the steps? Like, what are you... Anyway, that's my little rant. I'm going off my tangent. So the ending of the film is different.
But how deep is that? Yeah, it's a great movie.
I like how you're like, how deep was that? Are you talking about your own thesis?
Yeah, my thesis.
How deep was that? It was pretty steep, huh?
It was pretty good.
Yeah, it was really good. The music, which is iconic, was created by a local Viennese musician. So this is a story. I love this story because to me, it truly is just sometimes fate smiles on you. So Carol Reed, the director, went to La Heurige, which is a wine tavern, and walked in and saw a man playing the zither, which is a Viennese or an Austrian style, how to describe it. It's like a board with strings on it. Mm-hmm. I guess kind of like a sitar.
Yeah.
And he was playing, and Carol Reed approached him and was like, will you create a song, music for the third man? And the man was called Anton Karas, and he's like, okay. I mean, his whole
life changed.
Yeah, yeah. Because of that.
He was the number one hit in the 19 in the U.S.
The first Austrian hit on the radio. It's madness to me. I'm just going to hang out with my zither. Steven Spielberg's like, hey. So another fun fact was the famous Riesenrad scene when they're on the Riesenrad, the Ferris wheel. It was not filmed actually on the Riesenrad.
Right.
Because there wouldn't have been space and... Yeah, a lot of the scenes were filmed also like on a soundstage in London.
Right.
But of course, what I keep forgetting how much destruction there was in Vienna, even though this was one of the least bombed places in Europe, but there was the rubble and these areas. And there's a famous scene, kind of the Hohe Markt, which was this beautiful square that was really destroyed. I can't say the word decimated anymore because of you.
No, it's just, that's the etymology of the word.
Yeah, but now it keeps, okay, so I used to say the word decimated all the time because I'm dramatic. And then you were like, decimated is what?
One-tenth. It was to avoid deserters, whereas anyone who was causing trouble, they would take one-tenth of the army that was causing the trouble to get the other fighters to fight.
Really? Oh, I didn't know that part. Yeah, I just knew it was a tenth. Oh.
One-tenth.
What would they do to the people?
So you got 90, so look, how do you get 90% of your best fighters to fight? Kill the 10% that are slacking off. I forget which army it was, but that's where the term decimated.
Yeah, so and now I'm always like, now whenever I say decimated, because decimated to me means like destroy everything.
No, it just means one-tenth. You got 90% still. That's, if I want to be pedantic.
Okay. You want to be pedantic? So the city was decimated.
So you got 90% of your city.
You got 90%. Another fun fact that we researched while we were watching it was that there's actually a gay couple in the film, which for the time would have been, so it was Dr. Winkler and Baron Kurtz. And because you don't know immediately, of course, but there's signs.
Well, it was a bit, so the way it was presented was of the time, because it was a bit homophobic in the way they showed it. One was they showed it was a homosexual couple, or implied it. Right, because Kurtz was always well dressed, and he had the
fur,
the bow tie,
and the fur, and he was carrying a little dog.
So it was, and carrying the dog, but it was applying a crookedness to, because they were crooked because,
right?
You know, so it was of the time at the time, but also showing them on screen, and they were delightful. I thought,
yeah, they were great. Yeah, and there was, because we only realized it when they're on the balcony, when he's looking for Lime at the Riesenrad.
They're both wearing pajamas.
They're both wearing pajamas. They come on the balcony. I was like, wait a second. Because you don't think about it before. And then, because of course they couldn't talk about it openly. But it's true. It probably is quite homophobic to be like, the crooked people are the ones that are the gays. It took time. But yeah, it was really, really fascinating. And I think that's about it for our Third Man discussion. Great
I feel
film.
Like watching it again. Highly recommend it. It's just super nice. And let us know if you write us, and let us know if you think my take was correct, or if you have a different take.
Please send all praise to. Yeah, let me know if you think I was really correct, because I think I was.
Give me compliments. Say, give me compliments.
I'll hide any diatribe that comes. I will decimate some of the comments.
Now I'm immediately going to look up decimate, because I remember reading about it.
Oh, so you don't even know. Sure.
I have it on fairly good authority.
Oh, great. I have been policing myself for close to 6 years now.
Look it up now. Hang on. I'm going to pull it up. If there is only a way to do this on live air, hang on. Decimate.
Meaning.
So it does mean no.
Like a doctor looking up like.
Okay,
results.
So there's two. There's the to kill or destroy or remove a large proportion of, right? So it's correct when you say a large part of the country had been decimated.
10%?
No, it doesn't mean, but okay. So historical, to kill one in every 10.
Okay.
So it was, okay, it was a group of people, originally a mutinous Roman legion. And as punishment for the whole group, they killed one-tenth.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's where the term came from. But you can still use it linguistically to mean wiped out a large part of the population.
Okay, thanks. Thanks for giving me permission.
But if you want to be pedantic.
If you want to be pedantic one. Midnight in Paris.
It's the Roman legion. They would kill 1 out of 10 as punishment for the whole group.
Oh, that was like in school? Like they'd punish the whole class?
Yeah.
It's 1/10. They just beat.
No.
Beat 2 kids out of the class.
I mean, it's highly effective. If they beat that one kid and they're like, this will happen to all of you.
Incredibly effective.
Yeah, because you don't have to use all that energy on all. Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess we'll call it a day.
Well, glad we answered that question before the...
I'm bringing decimated back to my vocabulary. Well, thanks everybody for listening. Please check us out on Frau Batsby Instagram. And if you have any requests of people for us to cover, next week will be part 2 of Goddess Almaty about Alma Mahler.
Yeah.
And Soon, yeah, there's so many more people to talk about. There's a lot of history in this city.
But yeah, I love the city, and we'll keep the episodes coming. But it's also
renewing my visa. Yes, the weekend. I cannot wait. I'm gonna sleep. All right. Thanks again. Cheers, Papa. Bye.
Bye.